Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello, friends, and welcome to your Monday morning edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast, proudly sponsored by Stardust Spirits. I'm Mark Heath. I'm back in my rightful position as host of this brilliant behemoth of a podcast. Unfortunately, friends, my return does not coincide with an uptick in fortunes because bad news, good news, bad news. Town lost again at Leicester yesterday. They're now down in 19th. Good news, though, friends, I've got a very happy wife. Absolutely delighted. She spent most of yesterday afternoon picking out where I'm going to take her for dinner, based on cost, largely. She's defaced a lot of stuff in my office. So I came in this morning. My calendar has got Jamie Vardy written on it. She's got, I open my thing where I make my lists. She's put we love Jamie Vardy on there. There's a little surprise this morning. And she keeps sending me pictures of Jamie Vardy from yesterday, celebrating his goal, which I obviously grit my teeth and grin. It's nice to have a happy wife, happy life, all that kind of stuff. Someone will understand that, of course, is Stuart Watson. Stewie, you join us from a hectic Watson Tower. So things going on. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's not done yet, Mark. If Liz is going,
what?
Picking out the most expensive menus possible, Ipswich beat West Ham at home on the final day.
Yeah.
And Leicester lose to Bournemouth away.
I mean, the stats...
She could end up with egg on her face.
I hope that's the case. But, I mean, the stats suggest that feels pretty unlikely.
I'm skipping over the fact that there's been one home win all season.
And one win this year in the league. Ah, dear, oh, dear. AJ, a young friend, he's always full of positivity. How are you?
I'm all right. Less full of positivity, of course, after the weekend. I feel like this has been quite a traumatizing weekend for you. It looks like you're kind of just in the darkness. And I assume that you've just been in your office, like sleeping in your office, crying in your office.
This is how I've been since full-time yesterday, just sat in a darkened office.
Yeah, hasn't moved, hasn't showered, hasn't changed clothes. It's just Mark of the weekend has dragged into Monday. It's been a long few days.
I'm in a dark place, literally. The reason I'm sitting in the dark is because it's incredibly bright. And if I lift this, it'll completely ruin the shot, as it were. So although it is nice outside, I'm sat in a darkened room for you, the viewer. Right then, friends, should we crack on with Ipswich Town losing at Leicester? Hooray. Only one more of these games left to talk about. Hooray. Until we get into the summer. Let's start first of all with our Lord and Saviour, Kieran McKenna, talking about this defeat, and then we can really get into it, friends. Can't wait.
So in terms of the performance, you were kind of happy with a lot of the aspects of it. Is the sort of ruthlessness at both ends of the pitch that ultimately you feel it comes down to?
Yeah, I think that's a big one in terms of the clinical nature of this league. And I know Leicester are not going to stay in it, but Jamie Vardy certainly been in it for a long time. So, you know, that's where we have to get to in terms of execution. And, you know, in this league, if you don't take your chances, then you're likely to get punished. But also, you know, things we're talking about in the dressing room is that there's not been many games that we've been the dominant side, creating lots of chances this season, so we haven't had too much practice at that. Today was one of those. If you compare to where we were at last year, really, in terms of going away to Leicester or games against Southampton, I think we're much, much, much more dominant this season than we were. But we didn't find a way to win the game. So, you know, there's a lot for us to take from that going into next season, where we know there'll be a lot more games, where we'll have control of the game, we'll be the team in the ascendancy in the game, and there's a lot of things that you need to do well from a mental point of view, from a tactical point of view, to make sure that you win those games and you don't give them away and you don't lose them. So we know we're going to be in that position in terms of what some of the first half felt like today more often. It's a good position to be in. It's better to be the team who feel like they're controlling the game, who are creating the better chances. But those winning margins, those winning details, we know we have to refine those now in the summer and build them with a new group. And if we can do that, then we'd be in a great position because there was, you know, a lot of good things on evidence.
Okay then, Stewie. So there's Kieran handing out a big description, a prescription of hard to swallow pills. Town were dominant, but they lost. I put it to you again, rinse and repeat. Bit of a season in a nutshell performance, wasn't it?
Yeah. Snap verdict, boil it down. Didn't take loads of good chances. Switched off a couple of times and conceded some really disappointing goals. Lost the game.
Yeah. Excellent. Thanks for joining us. See you next week.
And that's that. Yeah, and it's, I guess it's, I think there has been an overreaction to this one. And I don't subscribe to completely unacceptable performance. Players were on the beach / not trying. I think that's just plain wrong. It's just been shortfalls throughout the season. And this was another day. Actually, it was a step forward in terms of, we've seen lots of games where Ipswich have had barely any of the ball and barely got in the opposition box. Not the case in this one. They had 20 shots. Okay, only two of them were on target, but got in lots of good positions, loads of shots, loads of touches in the opposition box, all of that sort of stuff. Just didn't have their shooting boots on in this game. And you heard there from Kieran McKenna, the argument is they've had a season of no real repetition and practice of that. So the muscle memory of scoring goals has kind of gone a little bit. And I do see the logic of that to a degree. So there was a lot in this game to like in terms of excitement and the way they went about it and the way they tried to attack it. But the result, the context of the season, the context of the second half of this season in particular, there's no getting away from it. Desperately, desperately disappointing yet again.
AJ, I think I'm right in saying, she just reeled off the stats there, in terms of shots and touches in the opposition box. It's one of Town's best games in that regard, if not the best game of the season. So what's your take on it all?
Yeah, I think it is Town's best attacking performance of the season statistically. As I will always try and caveat, you have to balance the numbers with the eye test, but I thought for the first, when did Vardy score? 28, so the first kind of 25 or so minutes up until Town had a couple of sloppy moments, I thought they were quite comfortably the better team. I thought that Leicester didn't have a sniff. I thought the way they managed those opening stages were really good. And I think that, again, yeah, it's a story that we've just seen far too often. They were really good in that period. They need to take their chances. They probably had two or three really good opportunities to score those goals. And then you're into, you know, alternate realities here and saying, oh, well, they score that, then everything changes. Then you frustrate the crowd and then, you know, Town have their tails up and they might be more clinical and the more opportunities to get into the box, things like that. But it doesn't happen again. And then you have that moment where Vardy scores and Leicester take the lead. And you can just see kind of the confidence in possession drain out of Ipswich when that happens. So when you take a step back and look at the performance of the whole, there are plenty of positives to take from it. But again, how many times have we sat here on a podcast and said, well, they haven't got the win, but there were positives to take from that performance because they did this and did this. And they follow it up by losing the next game or drawing the next game if they're lucky every single week. So yeah, it just sums up the whole season, doesn't it? And ultimately we're going to run out of time to be saying positives, but they can take into next week because there's only one more of those now.
I feel like pretty much every week of the podcast this season has been, well, they didn't get a result, did they? But yeah, some positives to take and look out, you know, remember how far we've come, all that kind of stuff. I feel like we've been rinsing and repeating that a bit.
I get that people are really, really fed up of that now. And I sensed a bit of a shift after this one that, you know, there's some comments now starting to be levelled at, you know, us in the media in terms of I don't want to keep hearing about the journey and starting to sort of holding people to account a bit more and all that sort of stuff. I don't know what kind of holding people to account looks like at this juncture in time, in terms of, is the effort there? Yes, I think it is. As there, but you know, there's so many different debates to open up. Could the recruitment have been better? Yeah, in parts, but I would say more was right than wrong in terms of if you look at that. Could McKenna have been more tactically flexible? We've had a big debate about that on previous podcasts. We don't need to go into the depths of that, but I think more so than people give him credit for. And then you get into all the major caveats of injuries and referees and sliding doors moments and all of that. Look, even if all of that had gone Ipswich's way, they'd have probably still come up short. But there's no disgrace in that. We keep saying it. It's, you know, they just got there a little bit too soon this season, and it's been a step too far. Yeah, and it gets us onto the kind of perspective piece. And I think this game has provided a neat way of kind of looking. McKenna always uses this phrase of progress isn't always linear. And I think it's, you know, I do think there's an interesting debate about the comparing and contrasting the performances against Leicester and Southampton in the Championship compared to the Premier League. The points return has gone down drastically this season. But I would say the gap in terms of the eye test, as Alex says, in terms of what you see on the pitch and the periods of play where one team is kind of controlling it and on top, feels like that's narrowed very much. And the whole narrative around Ipswich, no right to compete with Leicester and Southampton last season, major underdogs and did it against the odds, to this season, it's, you know, even though Ipswich have dropped below Leicester now, there's a sense that Ipswich are in a more stable place and we're in a better position as a club, as you know, the bigger picture, more stable going forward. So, yeah, I know people are really hurt and frustrated and fed up of losing football matches at the moment, but I guess our job is to try and be objective and take that little one step back from the emotion of it, and that's what I'm trying to do at the moment. But yeah, it's not fun, is it? Us continually talking about defeat.
Well, I suspect a lot of it is the nature of this game, isn't it? Certainly the frustration that I feel, you know, given that I live with a Leicester fan, it felt like going into this game was you know, a winnable game, a game that you'd hope that Town would come away with something from, and then you can say, oh, they're going to finish 18th, they're going to get this extra money, which, interesting, I saw Kieran make reference of after the game in terms of reasons to win the game, and then obviously they've lost to a team that have been awful all season, pretty much since they got rid of hanging with Mr. Cooper. They've been dreadful. So I can understand quite a lot of frustration around this game, this result, you know, as a standalone thing, because it felt like something that I guess we could cling on to before the season finishes, that they were going to probably get something from Leicester, finish 18th, get a bit of money, and we'd all go into the summer feeling, you know, not too bad about things, whereas they've lost. And it looks like they're going to finish 19th, etc. Anyway, going back to the game itself, AJ, it was obviously the Jamie Vardy party. He was always going to score. I don't care what anyone says. He was always going to score. Brendan Woolley, interesting, listening on to the game on Radio Suffolk, said it was the best away atmosphere he thinks he's been at all season.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. You'll probably need to come back to me on that because I'll need to have a little look through. But yeah, in terms of Premier League atmospheres, I think that they're usually not great, aren't they? And even when there are some where they start off really well, it can tail quite quickly. I'm thinking of somewhere like Everton where it was fever pitch for a while and tailed off. But yeah, this was up there and they went all out for this one. And I think that shows the regard that they hold Jamie Vardy in, because you show up, you get a full like A4 sized program that is just 100 plus pages dedicated to him. You go up into the press box, you can look out on the stadium. They have a whole thing which says GOAT on the stand opposite us. All the flags were out. They had displays, kind of two on each side behind the goal. They very much went all out. It didn't feel too dissimilar to what we had actually with that welcome out at Goodison. So that's the level that they kind of respect Jamie Vardy for. I agree, he was always going to score. There was not really going to be a world in which he was not going to finish with 500 appearances and 200 goals. It was always going to be that. The nature in which the Town conceded that goal was very disappointing, but it was also, look, it was always going to be in one way. We all hoped it would be Ipswich's day, but it also had to be Jamie Vardy's day. And we all sensed that and we all kind of saw this coming. And yeah, I think that there's the obvious disappointment of not getting something from the game. But as well, and I think this probably caused some frustration, watching that happen and watching Jamie Vardy score quite a historic goal as well was quite a unique moment, I'd have to say, given the figure and the presence that he's been in Premier League football.
The programmes look pretty special, AJ, from the pictures you share. They've got the picture, like a montage of Vardy on the front with a mass-reproduced signature. Are they already? Is that already on eBay, mate, or is that going to go into the private?
No, it's not on eBay because I wrote the opposition.
Oh, you're keeping it.
So, considering that it has my writing in there, it's staying in there. But yeah, maybe after a while, you know, when I go on to become the great football tactician of the 21st century, my plan will be to have a signed copy that I'll sell on eBay, maybe for in the region of 250k. I think something like that.
That's quite reasonable. Yeah.
I mean, I was just thinking, you know, you got to make it accessible to people.
Yeah. Absolutely. Good to have a plan. My wife was very keen to get hold of one of them. She was Town were losing 2-0. Can the boys get me a program? Can they bring me a program? No, I'm not going to ask them. Stop saying it.
They are on sale online. So I have had some messages about this, about fans who queued up for 20 minutes and weren't actually able to get hold of a program. There is a link if you go on to, I think you probably just have to search. I can already
Stu's
see
doing Stu's that.
Going to choose off to get his program. If you search something along the lines of Leicester City Jamie Vardy program, there will be a link.
You can buy them.
Pounds. Yeah, you can buy them. I have seen them. If anyone desperately wants them, then tweet me and I will send you the link on Twitter.
That's a shame because that reduces the collectability, doesn't it? If they're widely available. Yeah, it's not like the Ed Sheeran sticker you can only get in that one game. Anyway, I'm digressing a little bit here, Stu. Shall we skip through the goals quickly and then we can talk about wider themes and narratives? So Vardy scores, comes from Jack Clark slipping over in midfield. So kind of a mistake leads to a goal. And then the second goal, there's questions around certainly Alex Palmer. Do you want to talk through the goals?
If I have to, the frustration for me is Ipswich were always going to concede a decent number of goals in the Premier League. Mm. That's just natural. Double back-to-back promotions, hit the elite level of the Premier League. You're going to concede a fair chunk of goals. And there are days where you go world-class opposition, score world-class goals, and you go, fair enough, hold your hands up. Frustrating thing is, I'll go back through them all at some stage, but it feels like a decent number of them have been from Ipswich errors, been from their own doing. And both of these probably fall in that category. First one, as you say, is Jack Clark on the ball, not really under any pressure in the final third. Tries to, I don't know what quite happens. He sort of tries to turn sharply on it and ends up just losing his footing. A bit like the Steven Gerrard slip. Famous Steven Gerrard sit down, he goes, just James Justin pounces on it, manages to travel a decent way up the pitch with the ball, gets the wrong side of Kiusta, slips the pass, Jamie Vardy reverse finish, Jacob Greaves and Dara O'Shea both split second late with their challenges leading up to that one. So that kind of, there's been a few goals like that, hasn't there, where we've talked about attack turning to a goal conceded recently. The Arsenal, one of the early Arsenal goals certainly fall in that category. I think some of the goals at Newcastle, I'd have to go back, felt like that happened as well. I know there's been a few examples recently where Ipswich are on the attack, they give it away, make the wrong decision and they get punished. Second goal, second half, the one that killed it off. Ultimately it's Alex Palmer beating at his near post, which you always look straight at your goalkeeper when the ball flies in at the near post, but there's some errors leading up to that as well. I thought Leicester played through the lines a little bit too easily, and Leif Davis, who probably worth a a quick discussion on in general. I thought he'd had a really good game on his return from a three-game suspension, back to his attacking best. Could have had a couple of goals, could have had a few assists, but defensively it's that other side of Leif Davis where he kind of got sucked inside and left his man unmarked, who scored. So disappointing goals, both of them.
Alex Palmer, AJ, talk to me about Alex Palmer, because since he arrived, we've been full of praise for him because he has, you know, he turned in some tremendous performances, excellent saves. But I noticed a few grumbles recently about, maybe he's not quite been hitting those heights. And Stuart, I noted that in your piece, your observations you did this morning, there's something along those lines, you know, not been hitting the heights in recent weeks. So what's your take on Alex Palmer, AJ? Has he kind of taken a dip recently, would you say?
Possibly. It's kind of made a rod for his own back, hasn't he? Because he came in and essentially became like the next Iker Casillas for a few weeks. He was unbelievable. And you think about his first Premier League game when he played against Villa and he was unbelievable there. And when you look back at the goals that Town have conceded, and especially compare it to the first half of the season, where you probably go through and say, oh, that was a goalkeeper mistake, that was a goalkeeper mistake, that one was also a goalkeeper mistake. You know, there was none of that really in the early stages of Alex Palmer's time. And I don't think that there are that many that you could put down to him, but there are some where you have to then think, oh, could he have done better? And it's the goals, but there's also some kind of other individual moments, on-ball moments. So I think that you kind of have to separate the saves and what he's doing on the ball. With this one, you're looking at, is he supposed to do better with the save? Is he supposed to make a save to keep the ball out of the net, essentially, breaking down what a goalkeeper does here? And the answer, it's difficult because there's so much power behind the shot. And it's one where if he makes the save, I think everyone's saying, wow, that was a really good save from Alex Palmer. But the fact that he didn't make the save means that we're sat here saying, well, he should have really done better. So it becomes quite hard to assess. And I think it's harsh to pin too much on him, but he will be disappointed with it because he positions his body well and he's just too late to it. The ball goes up and over him. But there is a lot of power behind it. And then there's other aspects with his game that come to on-ball work, for example. And I think that you see bits where, especially against top-level opposition who press the hell out of you, it can become harder. So there have been times where he's passed the ball straight out of play. There have been times where there have been miscommunications. We had the obvious infamous indirect free kick against Wolves, which you'd say really has to go down to him more than anyone because he just let the ball roll under his foot. So there are little bits that come with that, but you also have to caveat that with, it's the obvious one, he's coming in January in front of a defence that has conceded about a million goals this season in a league that he's not played in before, having left West Brom on a permanent deal for the first time in his career. There's a lot of different moving parts into that. And yeah, there will be things that he will be disappointed with, but I think that overall, the net impact that he's had, even if he has tailed off a little bit since coming in, it's a huge net positive for me.
Okay, let's hear from Jack Taylor, and then we'll have a little chat around Leif Davis that Stu just teed up a second ago.
Jack, that must have been a tough afternoon.
Yeah, it was, because I think we showed some good stuff on the ball, but like so many times this year, been moments that have gone against us, so yeah, it's a tough one to take, but yeah, it's more looking forward to the future and getting back for pre-season now.
So many chances, it's barely believable you didn't score in that 90 minutes.
Yeah, like I said, we've had so many chances. I think we had 20, I think the boss said, so it's on us to take accountability for that and not taking our chances or making the right decision at the final bit. But yeah, we've created enough, so we've got to look back on it and just try and improve.
What's it down to? Is confidence an issue? It wouldn't be the biggest surprise in the world if it was, bearing in mind what's happened this season.
I don't think it is, because we're still playing. We're not just lumping the ball forward and going away from what we train every day and what we've built this club for and how we play for the boss. So I wouldn't say we're not confident, but it is a part to play maybe in the final third, maybe lack of goals recently. So that's part of football, and the quicker we get back, the quicker the lads will be back to normal.
How hard is it going out there playing at the moment since off the back of the Newcastle game when you've known you were relegated?
When it comes to it, it's not that bad. Obviously, context of the game today was a bit better for us because it's us versus them, who can finish above each other. That was the main focus on the week. But like I said, you're still representing your club in a Premier League game, so it's a pride moment to represent the club still at this level. And the fans showed a great account of themselves again today. Don't think we deserved the clap off at the end, to be honest, but it just shows the connection we've got with the fans and how much they believe in the journey that we've been on.
Okay, interesting from Jack there saying we didn't deserve being applauded off. More interesting comments, though, going back to Leif Davis, Stu. I assume you were in the same presser as AJ on Friday, it would have been, wouldn't it? Where Leif spoke openly, and this is unusual, you don't really hear professional athletes say things like this, about completely losing his confidence, which I thought was really interesting to hear.
Yeah, I think he deserves huge credit for saying that. I think there's, you know, like you say, I think athletes, people in general, I think tend to go with the kind of try and cover it up and style it out. And it would be a sign of weakness if you were to say that I've found it really tough and lost some confidence. But, you know, it took me by surprise, actually, that Leif came in and just said, yeah, actually, second half of the season in particular, I've really lost my confidence. And it wasn't just a throwaway line. He repeated it a few times. And, you know, maybe this season's come a bit too soon for me. And he said, you know, he alluded to some, you know, some things have happened away from football as well, which, you know, is not for us to pry into if he doesn't want to open up on that. But he's alluded to it. And again, a reminder that footballers are human beings. And the mental side of it is a big one. So I would say off the back of that interview, and he talked again about the social media storm that followed his red card against Arsenal, for him to come back from that three-game suspension and everything that he discussed, I was really rooting for Leif Davis going into this game. And I thought his performance was championship Leif Davis, where he was up and down that left-hand side, whipping in crosses. Set pieces were pretty good. Some of those trademark little cute cutbacks into the box. He hit the post in the 7th minute, smacked the near post with a shot. He had a goal disallowed for a really marginal offside late on in this game. It was just his role in that second goal, which sort of blotted his copybook a little bit. And that's always going to be, I think, the debate around Leif, is whether his defensive frailties kind of outweigh his attacking game. But you know, a return to the championship, I think, is clearly sort of the next step for him. You know, there was, if you'd have said right at the start of the season, who are Ipswich most in danger of losing, you know, it would have been Leif Davis high up there. There was talk about England at one stage, but that's kind of petered out a little bit now. And yeah, putting that second goal aside, there was a lot to like about Leif Davis's performance in this game, I would say.
Yeah, AJ, I think you made him your man of the match, didn't you? Do you want to talk a little bit about... I'm really fascinated when you get things from players, athletes generally, that you wouldn't expect. And we said before, a lot of the daily kind of dance of press conferences is all kind of trading in cliches and, you know, that kind of stuff. But to hear Leif talk really openly about the confidence side of the game, and also the social media thing, I thought again was fascinating, because we are massively guilty of, as Stu just said, forgetting these players are human beings. And Leif is, what is he, 25 years old, something like that? I mean, when I was 25, obviously I know that's around the age you are now, you're still kind of trying to establish who you are as a person, really. So to have all that going on off the pitch, and then, you know, on the pitch, you make a mistake, you get dog's abuse on social media. He was talking about people saying things about his family on there and this, that and the other. Obviously Piers Morgan comes out and calls him a thug. This is tough for anyone to handle, you know, let alone a 25-year-old playing at the highest level he's ever played at and just trying to do his best.
Yeah, absolutely. I was quite impressed that Leif was up for press last week, and, you know, coming back straight from a 3-match suspension, coming in, I think he comes across as someone that can be quite shy, but if you get him to talk, can really open up and talk really openly if it's something that he wants to talk about, or if it's something that he enjoys talking about, like flight simulators or something like that, then you can really, really dig quite deep into that and it becomes really interesting. And with the, I mean, we'll start off with the social media abuse. I'd seen a lot of that aimed at him as someone who's like chronically on Twitter and social media. There's a lot, and fans of top six clubs in particular are the kind of people that will go and, you know, go into DMs and send death threats and stuff like that. And you see it a lot on social media. And I think that it can so easily get brushed under the carpet. It's just words. It's just that. But the effect that it will have, especially on someone from his background who's not at all used to that. He hasn't come through an elite academy. He's come in at Ipswich and gone up the ranks and is now playing a high-profile role in this team. And then to be faced with something like that, I thought really must have hit quite hard. So speaking to him about that, he was really open to talk about it. When I asked him about that and the Piers Morgan comments, of course, and he said, yeah, of course, it really hits hard. And it's the kind of thing where you have to take a step back over the course of a week or two and let things blow over. But doing that is really difficult. So I think that for something like that and to come back from that, for starters, he deserves huge credit. And in terms of the confidence knock that he must have had, I think you could almost see it a lot in his performances. But then to come out and openly admit it is a whole other side of it, isn't it? As we've kind of alluded to. And again, coming forward in a public setting and saying that and saying, I'm disappointed in my performances, but I feel that, you know, I have taken this kind of hit in confidence and it's tough going out there trying to mark Bukayo Saka. And he's openly as well, he talked about, you know, he's not the best defender. And he talked about Jacob Greaves, actually, you know what, he's come in. Jacob Greaves, as a left-back in the Premier League, has been a better option for Ipswich, is kind of what he was saying, because he's a better defender. And what we've had in the last few games, Newcastle and in the latter stages against Arsenal and Everton and games like this, Jacob Greaves, as a better defender, has suited this team better. So I think you see someone who's really humble, who could easily, when things were going so well, have let his mind go to different places about England call-ups and joining Newcastle or something like that. But the fact that he's managed to say so down to earth, and I think he's very much aware that he needs to take a step back to the Championship to take a step forward. I think he's someone very wise in the way of knowing what his career needs to be to kind of take the next step.
Yeah, good stuff from Leif. Very interesting. Right, Stu, you want to say something?
No, I was just going to talk about the social media stuff in general. Yeah. We all have days, right, where we're more inclined to let sort of water off a duck's back. Sort of you can be in a just a better, more stable place in your life at times, and one or two social media comments, we get a very, very small taste of it, don't we, in our industry. Nothing compared to what elite athletes get. But sometimes, and I think I found this with footballers, the lower down the pyramid you get, there's not as much noise around you, but in some ways that becomes louder, because I think at Premier League level it can almost become white noise. There's so much of it, it becomes nothing. But then it only takes one or two comments, and if it just touches a nerve sometimes, it can grow in your mind, can't it? And suddenly, you know, Alex and I will say things, oh, did you see all the massive reaction to that? And then sometimes I'll have to say, how many comments was it? And you go, oh, actually, it was three. And you go, well, it's three comments. Do you know what I mean? And it's not, it's always the vocal minority sometimes. And you do have to take a step back. But if it gets you on a given day where things, you know, there's other things that are pressing your buttons and stuff, it's tough. And I think we do have to remember that. So, yeah, well done, Leif, for talking the way you did. And well done on your performance. We know he knows there's still areas of his game to improve, but he's a very good footballer going forwards, and I thought there was a reminder of that in this game. So that's encouraging ahead of life back in the Championship.
Have you seen that great ad? I think it's an Australian advert where it starts at a house. Someone opens a door. There's a guy with a clipboard saying, "Are you so and so? Did you tweet this?" And it's a kind of less than athletic looking guy, shall we say, opens the door and says he's tweeted something about a boxer going down from a body shot. I would never take it. Can't believe he's gone down for that. What a wimp. And he goes, yeah. And he goes, right. And then said boxer just walks around the corner and then said, right. And then essentially just punches him in the stomach. I love that. That's what should happen for all this kind of shit on social media. Winds me up. Anyway, let's move on. I want to talk to you about the front four, Stewie, because you make mention again, I know, and this is not the first time we've talked about this. Too much dribbly boys going on. George Hurst gets a start, barely touches the ball, and the three behind him, maybe that's because they're going into business for themselves too much, shall we say?
The first thing I'd say is that they're all really fun to watch.
Yeah.
And we want fun and we want excitement. That's why we go to football matches. Also to see the team win, which has been in short supply. So there's always that trade-off in football, isn't there? But generally speaking, those are the sort of players we want to see in our football teams that we watch week in, week out. But football is all about balance, isn't it? The whole team can't all be of a similar ilk. And I just felt that maybe three of them tipped the balance slightly the wrong way. The caveat, of course, is that McKenna's got limited attacking options at the moment. In an ideal world, he'd have a different profile of right winger, that's for sure. He'd have a Burns slash a Benet slash a Caden Jackson, just a straight line out and out speedster that kind of stretches the pitch and opens things up on the left hand side and has so many knock on effects, but he hasn't really got that at the moment. You want to get Nciso in your side because he can do game changing things, as we've seen with the goal at Everton, etc. And Jack Clarke is a player that's been a very, very good championship footballer, and he's someone you kind of want to get up to speed going into next season. So I could see the thinking behind the sort of the three that he picked, but as you say, it's not the first time that we've talked about it not quite clicking, the balance not quite being there. It felt a little bit to me like, and I don't think this will be a conscious thing, but it felt like it was players playing a bit too, maybe for themselves, maybe you know, for whatever reason, it's to prove a point to themselves, to the fans that have this summer in mind, that they were sort of all trying to do it themselves a little bit at times, and it just didn't quite work. Which is a strange thing to say, given we talked about all the chances created and 20 shots and all of that sort of stuff, but they were kind of individual moments rather than that telepathic team build-up that we saw throughout the championship season.
AJ, what's your take on this? I think you said before, from memory, that you're not sure that it's not going to be a problem for much longer, obviously, that Nciso and Hutchinson can play in the same team. We've had similar chats around Philogene being in that mix as well and potentially trying to do too much. And obviously, Jack Clarke is also a top dribbly boy. Do you think that they've kind of got the balance wrong at times there?
Yeah, in a way. I'm just going to remind myself. So it was the Southampton game, wasn't it, where we saw Hutchinson and Nciso for the first time in the same team. And it was quite exciting, but you could see that they wanted to occupy similar pockets of space. And then you bring Jack Clarke into that. Broadhead started against Southampton, but you bring Jack Clarke into that. And you do have players that essentially want to be in similar pockets. You have two that want to cut inside from the wings, and you have one through the middle that essentially just wants to kind of take it a little bit to one of the two sides and shoot, or potentially, if he's feeling like it, he might pass the ball. So when you have that, you've then got this really congested area, which means two things. One, it's quite easy to defend against. You need to have a real moment of magic to then open up the space and create a proper chance. And two, that you have to think about the shape as well and counter-attacking. There were quite a few times where Leicester's best opportunities getting forward came from Ipswich giving the ball away in the final third. So when you have these kind of players on the sides that are coming into very similar positions, all of a sudden they're all quite narrow. They all want to be in the same areas, that when Leicester win the ball back, they can stretch the pitch out more, and there's more than emphasis on the midfielders having to be in the right areas and the defenders having to be in the right positions, whereas defending very much starts from the front. And there are different parts to this. Like Amari, for example, I think his defensive work has improved tenfold, and you can see that in the stats. The numbers back that up a lot. Jack Clarke is tracking back as well. But I think in this system, in the same team, at least at this level in the Premier League and in the Championship, that could be totally different because the defensive responsibilities and the opportunities that opponents will have to counter, totally different. I'm not really sure that it works. And that's maybe one area of reflection that you can look back at, but it's also very difficult when Julio and Ciso has only played a handful of games. Amari Hutchinson's been in and out of the team. Jack Clark is still a player that has to get up to speed with playing with whoever is different in the middle. And you've lost Jaden Villagin and you've lost the natural right sider in that system. Lots of different caveats to it. But I think it's fair to say that these three players, for me, I just don't think work that well together.
It's not just the balance of technical attributes here. We're talking about them all being sort of
dribbly boys.
Yeah. I was going to say dribbling-minded players. That doesn't roll off the tongue, doesn't it? We'll stick with dribbly boys. I'll go with it. It's not everyone's cup of tea. But it's also the sort of balance of like the age profile. They're all very young. And it's, you know, just maybe a little bit of experience comes into the mix that a Chaplin, a Schmodix, etc. will bring. It's the physical profile of the three of them as well. They're all a little bit lightweight, aren't they? And we're talking about the Premier League. The biggest lesson has been the physical profile of these players, big athletic players. And so, yeah, the balance of the team, certainly in that area of the pitch, there just wasn't quite the right balance with those three. If you look at Kieran McKenna's recruitment, he does seem to kind of like to stockpile. He's clearly drawn to these type of players. These are the players that he's most enjoyed working with in his career. He's been a youth coach, so he enjoys working with youth. He likes these sort of technical Premier League produced young players that are very exciting. I guess Schmodix, the signing of Schmodix is the only one that sort of really broke the mould with that last summer, but then went back to signing Philogene in January. Maybe that's one of the lessons from this season, that going forwards, the recruitment needs to bring in some sort of more rounded, different attributes in areas of the squad.
Yeah, and certainly we've said before, Benny and Burns, you know, in terms of profile, very athletic and physical, bring stuff that the other players in that across that kind of three behind the striker don't necessarily.
Yeah, and Schmodix is completely different as well, isn't he? Yeah. He's basically a striker type playing in that support role. He's a bit more, he gets stuck in a bit more. He's on the last shoulder. Some of his best work sort of happens off the ball rather than on the ball. So McKenna has had some key bits of his armoury taken away from him, and I think that's fair to say.
Before we move on from this game, I guess we should also mention kind of injury stuff, which obviously has been a huge part of the narrative this season. Injury crisis from week to week. George Hurst started this game. Liam Delap was on the bench. You spoke to Kieran about that after the game. And also Cameron Burgess completely dipped out. We expected him to maybe have a spot on the bench with Greaves moving inside and Leif Davies coming back, but he wasn't involved at all. So there's an update on that. And also Calvin Phillips from the presser. So you're probably worth mentioning these before we move on.
Yeah, Calvin Phillips, unlikely to play again this season. Obviously, there's only one game left now, but he's, you know, spoke to Kieran about him in the pre-match about his sort of stop-start season in general. We talked in the previous pod about what's next for Calvin Phillips, and that's going to be very interesting. But yeah, not going to see him again in the West Ham game at the weekend. Cameron Burgess, you know, we thought he would probably drop out of the team with Davis coming back and Greaves moving inside. The bigger surprise that he wasn't on the bench at all. It's not unusual for Kieran McKenna not to carry centre-backs on his bench. He likes to make it as attacking-minded as possible, but he's short of options at the moment. And there were two sort of right-sided defenders there in Godfrey and Wolfenden. Cleared that one up afterwards, said Cameron Burgess had a niggle. We was asked, where is the niggle? The niggle's in his hamstring. Obviously, there'll be conspiracy theories there that Cameron Burgess is coming to the end of his contract. He's been linked to the likes of Girona in Spain, Rangers in Scotland. Talks have been going for quite some time from what Kieran McKenna has said, but he understands that the Australian international needs to explore his options. So we'll see how that one pans out and whether he features against West Ham next weekend. If Cameron Burgess is leaving, I really hope he gets on the pitch one more time and gets the send-off that he deserves. After some of his big moments during the back-to-back promotions. And then Liam Delap didn't start this game. He was on the bench, came on sort of late on. Obviously, then that's it. Is this a changing of the guards? Is this with half an eye on Liam Delap's likely departure in the summer? The explanation was that just felt that George Hurst deserved his opportunity. We've talked about his goals to minutes ratio this season being good and the impact that he's had off the bench. Felt this was the right time to play him, especially with it being Leicester, one of Hurst's former clubs. And he seems to be a player who's quite motivated by proving a point against previous employers. So, that's the roundup on those three.
Okay, anything else to mention before we move on from this one, either of you, in terms of stuff from the game? I want to move on to talk about the second half of the season and wider issues surrounding that. Is there anything you'd like to add, though, before we get to that point? No? All right, fair enough. Right, by way of transition into this chat around the second half of the season, you also spoke to Kieran about coming up short against the relegated sides, Stu. Obviously, they've lost to Leicester, Southampton, Wolves. It seems strange now saying Wolves, you know, wherever in that mix, but that was, you know, an important game. They lost that as well. So let's hear what Kieran said about that in a minute. I want to talk about the second half of the season.
2 points from a possible 12 against Leicester and Southampton. That's obviously been a shortfall in the season, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's clear. That's something that we need to, you know, own and reflect on. I think, as I said, we played against those teams last year. They were, you know, generally there with Leeds and by far the hardest games that we had. And for example, when we came here last year, we managed to get a point, but it felt like we were clinging on with our fingernails to the game, and really we managed to hang in there and then push late in the game with some substitutes and get a point. The two games against Leicester this year felt completely different to that. We've, you know, been dominant in both games, in my opinion. Look, four games in football is a small sample, so we should have won the first game, and it probably wouldn't be a discussion point or for a referee's decision. If Leaf hits a millimetre closer to the inside of the post today, we go 1-0 up, and there's every chance we win the game. Southampton game at home, we had much better chances in the game that should lead us to winning the game. So the margins are really, really fine. I think it's a positive thing that we are, in my opinion, much more dominant than we were last year against that level of opposition. But also, we're not going to hide behind the fact that, you know, coming out on top in margins and tight games is going to be massively important for us, and it's something that we've done fantastically well this year, and it's something that we need to get back to next year.
Okay then, AJ, let me rewind back to that famous night. Town beat Chelsea, hooray, lift off, baby. Then they go and they get a draw at Fulham, but it's a game they probably should have won. Even so, still feeling pretty positive after that. Town are going to get better as we get deeper into this season. They must do. Kieran McKenna will make players better. We're going to be all right. And then we sit here on May the 19th, they've won one game, league game, in 2025, and have generally regressed. So how concerned should we be about that trend, friend? Because it feels to me, certainly in terms of when Town go behind, my feeling about whether or not they can get back into a game has completely reversed from, I don't know, it's apples and pears and apples and oranges, whatever, from the Championship. Obviously, it's a lower standard, but whenever they went behind in the Championship, it always felt like, oh, that's all right, they'll come back. And to an extent, it felt like that still at the start of this season. And that, for me, has kind of certainly waned. I appreciate they're playing at a higher level. But there's no way around it. The second half of the season has been massively, massively disappointing.
Yeah, it has. I think confidence in football is an aspect that gets, probably especially in the Premier League, I think there's two things that get swept under the carpet a lot. One of them is physicality. I think it's the biggest step up in football to go from Championship to Premier League, and people don't talk about it enough. And the other one is confidence, and confidence is something that transfers into all of football, but all it takes is one, two, three bits to totally obliterate you. So Ipswich are in a position where they beat Chelsea, they went to draw at Fulham, they then had that really frustrating, annoying result against Brighton, I think was the one after that, with the cup in between there. And the bit that totally devastated them was having City come there and absolutely run riot. And then they'd have to pick themselves up and go to Anfield. And they were so, so far off Liverpool. Understandably so, these are top teams. But how easy is it to then go from that? You're trying to regroup. You've just conceded 10 goals in two games. They're going to the Southampton match, a Southampton side who were looking a little bit better. And they were in a pretty poor state, Ipswich, because they'd really taken a battering over two games. You then lose at home to Southampton. And the narrative is you've lost to the worst team in Premier League football history at home. And trying to pick yourself up from there is really, really difficult. And I think people underestimate how hard it is from a psychological perspective to then go and do that. And you have different bits that come into it where, look, they go to Villa and they battle against the odds to get a draw. They win at Bournemouth. They drew at Everton and things like that. But without properly being able to put a run of results together, which is hard in the Premier League, they've not done it at all this season, it's so hard to change that mentality into a positive one when you've had a string like that where you've really taken... I mean, January was such a hard month. January, for me, I think, was the pivotal month in the season when I look at it for kind of where this regression kind of came in. How concerned am I about it going forward? A bit. I think the home form question mark for me is the biggest one, because they need to get that up to scratch. They lost one home game, wasn't it, in the Championship last year, which was right at the start to Leeds. They drew or won every single other. And if they're going to get promoted, they're going to need to replicate that kind of form. On the flip side, I think that the quality gap will be quite significant next year. But that's a discussion for another time. So, yeah, there are definite concerns in there for me for kind of turning this around in the mid to long term. But I don't think it's going to be something that Kieran McKenna can't fix over pre-season, rebuilding kind of the morale and momentum of this squad.
What's your take on this, Stu? I know McKenna said something after the game around rebuilding the culture with a new group of players over the summer. And we're all talking about as if it's inevitable that when Town go back into the Championship, they'll be one of the best teams because they've got, you know, that's what we expect from them. They did what they did without this kind of level of player, and now they go back. And obviously they're going to be dominant in the Championship next season. We're talking about that as if it's a given. But having had the season they've had, particularly the second half of the season, there's going to be some work to do, isn't there, on the kind of old Mike Hotel mental health confidence side of the game?
Yes, there is. Yeah. Momentum is everything in football. Mm. Confidence is huge. As Alex says, it's probably underestimated. It's what swept Ipswich to the Premier League. It becomes sort of self-fulfilling prophecy sometimes, isn't it? Not just the psyche of the players, but then, you know, collectively amongst the fan base as well. You go into games not just believing you're going to win, but just almost feeling, knowing that you're going to win. And then you get the flip side of that, and it doesn't take long for it to go. And as you say, looking back at the fixture list and the way it's fallen, we tried to sort of, going right back to the start of season, we tried to sort of go, it could be a positive playing Liverpool and City first, because it's a, you know, you're going to learn the standard the hard way from the start, and then everything else from there is not going to feel as tough. And you get those two games out of the way as free hits, but wasn't the ideal introduction, is it? I look back and think that performance against Liverpool, Portman Road on the opening day, if that had been against any other team in the division or a lot of other teams in the division, that could have been win. That could have been the home win. And we wouldn't have then had the whole narrative of 10 games without a win. And psychologically, everything builds from there. So the mental side of it has been massive this season. It will take something to... I'm fascinated to see how everyone deals with that next season in terms of the expectations that haven't been for so long as a football club for this group of players to learn how to win again, essentially. But the start of next season is going to have a little bit of pressure with it, isn't it? Yeah,
absolutely. It's an entirely different mind frame, isn't it, going down, expected to be, you know, one of the favourites, if not the favourite, yet coming down after a dreadful season in terms of points and wins and all that kind of stuff, you know. Very, very interesting. Right, one of the constants, though, has been the fans, of course, and their brilliant support. I just want to play you a little clip from Jack Taylor about the fans before we get into something slightly more positive.
Jack, that must have been a tough afternoon.
Yeah, it was, because I think we've showed some good stuff on the ball, but like so many times this year, been moments that have gone against us, so it's a tough one to take, but it's more looking forward to the future and getting back for pre-season now.
So many chances, it's barely believable you didn't score in that 90 minutes.
Yeah, like I said, we've had so many chances.
I think that's the same clip, isn't it? I think Ross has accidentally uploaded two of it.
It's the like the season, just clip. Groundhog Day. There's a stage where can we just do that with match reports as well? Just keep publishing the same ones.
All right, Ross is currently at his solicitor, so I can't find.
So he's uploaded the same one onto two, because probably I know which bit this will be. So this is a question that I put to Jack Taylor.
Yeah.
quite near the end, as he had to rush off to the bus. And Jack Taylor was really honest and open, actually, and you could tell how much he hurt. He, honestly, at one point, he looked like he was about to cry, to be honest. He was really emotional after this game because he very much came out and said it wasn't good enough. And he said, we went over to the fans and they clapped us off, but we didn't deserve to be clapped off. And it's not often you hear that from players, let alone one for Ipswich, where there's kind of this reciprocal feeling between the fans and the players. So hearing that was a bit of a surprise, in a positive way, I think. And then I asked him at the end, what is your message for the fans? And it was basically just saying, thank you for following us up and down, for spending a lot of hard-earned money on us. And, you know, we hope we gave you something special for getting to follow us in the Premier League. And we want to be able to right the wrongs, which you can tell with players sometimes it becomes, you can, especially when we write it up, you read it and it's like, same old rubbish. But when you talk to them and you see how they actually feel, it's a very different situation when you're sat there or stood there and you get to see kind of what their emotions are, and you can genuinely see the hurt on his face, which I think, given the fact he didn't even start the game, he only played 20 minutes, is saying something, to be honest.
Yeah, well rescued, AJ. Note to self, play all the clips in future before I start bringing them in. Stu, you got something to say?
Do you know what? I wanted to have a quick debate, and maybe we could... I now see in terms of, and I would class this in the sort of the overreaction category of a bit of rewriting of history in terms of, would we have done any worse if we'd have just stuck with the team? We're talking about momentum and confidence and all of that. And the response to that would be, well, why didn't we just stick with the formula that got us here? Which, A, if you go back to last summer, no one was saying, let's not sign anybody. But B, even if they wanted to, they haven't really had the option to do it. Who are we talking about here? The goalkeeper, did you need to mess around with Flagge? Ultimately, he didn't sign a new contract that was offered to him. You could argue Ipswich could have pushed harder, but that's a bit of a moot point. We'll never know what, you know, how that unfolded. They got it wrong with the replacement, sure. But Davis has played pretty much all of the games. Axel Tuanzebe, when fit, has played most of the games. Morsi, similar. Wes Burns, were it not for being injured, would have probably played most of the games. Connor Chaplin, were it not be for injured, I think he got himself back into the team leading up to Christmas and may well have started a lot of the games. He's back in the team now and playing. Broadhead started the season with an injury and was always playing catch up. And then is anyone really going to go heavy into bat that say Massimo Luongo over Kajusta and George Hurst over Liam Delap and Ipswich would be in a better place? Probably not. So that one doesn't sit quite right with me. It's not. And then if you went back to last summer and said, who left? If you looked at it now, we let players go that we shouldn't have let go. Is there anyone that you could really hand on heart say that is the case for? Hlaki's probably about the only one that you could make a strong argument for. But again, he's not played for Burnley this season, has he? So I think Ipswich did get the balance right last year. They did keep the bulk of that squad and tried to retain that spirit and mentality whilst also recognising that they needed to try and do something to upgrade. And a lot of things have been out of their control this season. And that's not being an apologist for this season. And it's not sticking your head in the sand and saying that some things haven't been quite got right. But I'm sure everybody in all departments of the club, from Mark Ashton to McKenna to the players, would say they've learned a lot from this season. But this is all new to all of them. We do have to remember that.
Yeah, 100%. And I think a lot of it's just born from frustration, isn't it? The season's not worked out how any of us hoped it might. And inevitably, as part of that, there's a lot of captain hindsight that goes on, isn't there? We should have done this, we should have done that, that kind of stuff. But, you know, as they say in football, it is what it is. We are where we are, and we can only go forward. We can't go backwards. But what we can do in looking forwards, friends, a bit of positivity to end the show, is crown the player of the year, which is what's going to happen on Sunday, the final home game. And let's hope that Town do finish with a win, something to take us into the summer feeling good about things. Player of the year vote's been running for a while. There are some obvious choices. I'm not allowing either of you to say give it to the fans either. All right. AJ, you kick us off then. I mean, there are, off the top of my head, I think there are three obvious choices. I would say Liam Delap, Jens Kajusta, Dara O'Shea, and maybe had Axel been fit for a bit longer, he might have been in the mix as well. Am I missing anyone? Have you got any strong feelings?
No, I don't really think you're missing anyone. I think that different players have gone, kind of, they've had ups and downs, haven't they? And you could maybe pick out like Sam Morsey, for example, has looked really good at times at this level, and I thought he was good over the weekend, and then he's had others where he just looks quite comfortably off the pace, and it's kind of switched between the two. Jacob Greaves, another one who started fantastically, had the injury, spiraled a little bit. Alex Palmer, we're genuinely in a discussion possibly for Alex Palmer being in this debate, aren't we? Because even though he's joined in January, he's saved Town quite a few points. So those are definitely the three. It's hard to look beyond that. I think it's also, I think we could probably, I don't want to speak for all of us, but the order that you've named them in, I think, is the 1, 2, and 3. Most likely as well. They're the three standouts, aren't they? And more than anything, and maybe Delap in Venice is the one who stands out in this, but Delap showed the most quality and he showed that he's got the X factor and the big future and the probable summer move. But Kajusta and Dara O'Shea are the consistent figures of this team, aren't they? They've been the ones that are putting in those 7 out of 10 minimums week in, week out. So yeah, those are the kind of the standout three for me.
Stu, you're going to write something around this, as discussed pre-pod. Liam Delap, you'd imagine, would be the prohibitive favourite to win it. But can you make a solid argument that either of Jens or Dara should actually be the ones getting the award?
No, Liam Delap's got to be number one. And maybe the fact that he's probably going to be off in the summer might sway others to kind of place their vote elsewhere. I mean, that's going to be the case with Kajusta as well. Let's be honest. Look, I think that's the four. Delap, Kajusta, O'Shea, Twanzebe. There's a chance that at least three, maybe all of them, could go in the summer. Delap, certainly. Kajusta, certainly. Axel, I think, has done more than enough to get himself a Premier League club, even with some of the injury setbacks as a free agent. I think if he'd have played all season, Axel, he'd have been pushing himself right up that list because he's looked very much at home in terms of the athletic physical qualities required at this level. But ultimately, he's only been fit enough to start 16 league games. So, yeah, I'd probably go with those three. O'Shea's probably been the most consistent player over the course of the piece. But, yeah, it's got to be Liam Delap. He scored 12 goals in his debut season for the club, in the Premier League, in a position that he's never really consistently played before. And he's got his pick of, without overplaying it, most clubs in world football at this moment in time. So, yeah, if he doesn't win it, it would be a little bit ridiculous in my point of view.
Yeah, he's done all right, isn't he, the lad? Right then, friends, we've just passed the hour, the golden hour of podcasting perfection. Anything else from either of you to mention? Stu, how did your FPL side get on over the weekend? Because obviously there's a brawl for all between you and I. I did all right. I don't know.
Let's have a look. I did have a little look on the way up to Leicester, and I believe I'd had a good Friday night and I'd leapfrogged you, but I think you've got more players to come because we're in a pretty tight battle here.
I got 40. That's what I'm on at the moment.
You got 40. So yeah. I got 62.
What? Wait!
But I've only got one player left to come.
Oh, you're above me then. I've got, what have we got? I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players left to come. And I also played my assistant manager chip, which I had no idea what I was doing. I thought, is this an opportunity to get more points? I think so. Unai Emery, on you go. Got me 10 points, didn't he? I don't really know how, I'll be honest. But I'll take it. AJ, you sitting there smugly. Obviously, you're the runaway leader of the league. You're going to win. Yeah. How did you do?
41 at the moment. I've also got 5 players to play. 3 of them play for Manchester City, who didn't look great over the weekend, so that's a bit concerning. And 2 of them play for Wolves, who have nothing to play for. So I'm happy that I will most likely finish top of the four, but I think I'm going to fall short of my top 100 aim.
It's tight. Basically, it's tight between you and I, Mark, going into the final match.
Yeah. I'm not taking you out for dinner.
No, we're walking out with Sam Morsi for the open pre-season game.
Full kit. Pre-season. I thought it was championship, but fine.
I don't know if the club will sign off on that. I mean, yeah. I don't know if they'll sign off on it full stop, to be honest. I think our best chance is maybe a little pre-season friendly at Needham or Felixstowe or something. They might allow it. I don't know.
I'd be up for it. It would look great. Was it that you sent me that clip of Cole Palmer coming out with a mascot who was like about a foot taller than him?
You are. I would say you are also taller than Sam, aren't you? Sam's about what, 5? He's not a tall player. He's about 5'8", I'd say.
Isn't he? Oh yeah, much taller than him.
Ah, okay.
I'm 5'10" in shoes. So
well, there you go. Just power over him. Your stilettos on and good to go.
You just mentioned there, of course, Man City at the weekend. I really enjoyed, boys, the FA Cup. I don't know if you involve. I mean, there's something about it that captured me this year. I think because I turned it on, and they were giving it the big build up on the BBC. The sun was out. It was a prohibitive favourite against an underdog. It took me back to 1990 and Palace beating Liverpool. And sometimes you get a wave of nostalgia, just waves over you, and you think, I remember, I bloody loved this when I was a kid. And there's something about it made me watch it, and I really, really enjoyed it. Obviously the FA Cup has gone downhill in terms of priority and stuff over the years, which is sad. But as a standalone game on an event on Saturday, I thought it was great, Stu.
Amazing. Yeah, I guess it raises a debate about different ways to win the game. We've been talking about Ipswich's dominance and having loads of shots and all of that. But the only stat that matters is how many times you put the ball in the back of the net. And did Palace have something 20% something possession? Goalkeeper, worldie, man of the match.
Yeah.
Obviously, a bit of fortune with the handling it outside the box. But brilliant for the game. Brilliant that Palace won it. I just love the scenes in the stands at the end. And that's what we support football clubs for, isn't it? That's why you go through all these long, hard times, because you just hope that once in a generation, a moment like that comes along for, unless you support one of the big six or whatever. You get that once in a blue moon. And it was amazing to see the Palace fans. And I've seen just phone clips of the reactions at the final whistle and people in tears and hugging and different generations of fans. A bit like the Everton trip for me recently. It did sort of stoke up sort of a wave of nostalgia and going as a kid and going with your dad and reminding you why you fell in love with the game. Brilliant.
Yeah, there's something intangible that really hit me on Saturday as I was watching the build-up, connected something in my core as a kid. I remember why I first fell in love with the game and, the cup final and the magic of it and the sun's shining and, I absolutely loved it.
Did you see the big TIFO in the crowd and it was dad hugging his two boys? I think it was after the Darren Ambrose goal. It must have been the famous goal against Man United. And they're grown up now, the two children, and their father's passed away.
Yeah, it was really nice.
And that really hit me hard. You saw those two lads sort of hugging and crying at the end of the game. And for them to have seen that in the stands and then for Palace to go on and win it, special.
Absolutely. I don't know if you saw there's a clip doing the rounds on social media of John Murray, the BBC commentator, kind of wrapping things up after full time. He's an exceptional commentator, but that was wonderful stuff from him on the day, kind of really contextualising just how much it meant to Crystal Palace, the first ever major trophy the club's ever won, and what a day it was. And, you've got Clinton Morrison going mental next to him as well, obviously ex-Palace.
It's the build-up, isn't it? It's like the promotion for Ipswich, isn't it? All those feelings that we felt with the two promotions, and certainly the promotion last year, wasn't just what they'd achieved. It's the decades that build up to it, isn't it? It's that outpouring of emotion.
AJ, I'm interested to know, as someone who's a little bit younger than both of me and Stu, does the FA Cup have that kind of nostalgic importance to you? Have you? Because I guess you've grown up in an era where the FA Cup has kind of been marginalised.
Yeah, it hasn't, in a way. I mean, thinking back to, like, this is going to make me sound really young, but think back to like famous cup upsets, for me, you go back to Wigan. I'm sorry, and I know it probably seemed quite.
Well, I mean, it does still stand. That does still stand as a huge upset in the.
Yeah, and I think that it's the last few years, haven't they? They've been really depressing, and the kind of you saw comments from Pep where he was saying, like, oh, yeah, it'd be nice to win the cup again. That'd be good. It wouldn't make our season any better if we do. It's been a bad season. And there's a kind of a debate that comes with it. Like, would you rather finish fifth and go in the Champions League or finish 12th and win the cup and your first ever trophy and go into the Europa League? And some clubs would probably say, oh, for the money, we'll take the Champions League spot. But money can't buy some of the stuff you saw over the weekend and getting to see that. We saw it with Leicester fairly recently as well, of course, when they did it. I know that they're kind of a bigger club with more success, so it's maybe not quite the same, but it's moments like that that do bring a lot of it back. And it's actually making sure that, and you see it a little bit with the Europa League, where the game that's going to be played on Wednesday, neither team actually care about the trophy that much. Spurs a little bit, I guess, because they've not won one in a million years, but like, it's about qualifying for the Champions League. This is a team that's won it, that care about the trophy, that are going to have a trophy parade, and they care about what they've won. And it's going to be brilliant to see Palace play in the Europa League next year as well. Can't wait for that, them to be playing Galatasaray at Selhurst Park on a Thursday night or something like that. But the fact is that it's more than just that that makes it really nice. And it's players that have not won anything in their careers as well. I mean, I think most of the players on who started that game wouldn't have won a major trophy. It's a club that's not won a major trophy. And all combined to give a bit more faith in football, where the big teams always win. And we've had two non-Big Six teams win the two domestic cups for the first time since 2012-13, when it was Wigan and Swansea who won it. So gives you a bit of hope in humanity, doesn't it?
I bloody loved it, I'll be honest. It gave me a real boost on Saturday. Sitting watching that took me back to my childhood. Anything else, boys? Any other business before I do the outro? You got anything else to mention?
Credit to Leicester for lovely food and giving us beer after the game. That was nice. I know, right? They gave us Chang beer. I have one up in my fridge upstairs. My question to finish the pod, and you don't have to answer it today because we're 70-odd minutes in, is it normal to have a jacket potato in a service station? Service station food to me is fast food. And I feel that if you have a jacket potato and half a chicken in a service station and eat it off a plate rather than a burger that you're eating out of a crappy wooden box, plastic cardboard box. Yeah, that doesn't sit right with me.
Is this Watson getting his macros in?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Chicken and good
carbs. He did it out of spite this time because we took the piss a little bit about him. And every time we go to Peterborough services, and Ross is the same, we always think of Stew and his baked potato. So just for that reason, he made sure to go get one with half a chicken yesterday.
Stew, which, game recognises game, Stew. I respect it. I hope you're doing press-ups in between mouthfuls.
No. Jim's completely gone out the window, if I'm honest. I've got a lot of niggles, as Kieran McKenna would say. Niggles in my knee, niggles in my shoulder. This was just a healthy choice. I'd just be eating fast food for the sake of it. So I got myself, as Alex says, half chicken and a jacket potato. And it absolutely blows Alex and Ross's mind. Every time they bring it up, like it was like some huge event in the history of the world. Do you remember when Stu had a jacket potato at the services? You need to get out more, Alex. If that's still something you remember 6 months later.
It will be much more than 6 months. I will be telling my grandchildren the story. Stu with his little, like, full-on plate sat in the service station, trying to figure out where to put the school dinner thing. Is there a tray going back in to ask where to put it? That was...
Meanwhile, Ross bought the children's meal from, I think it's called German Doner Kebab, which is now an outlet that's, I believe it's a franchise, has opened at Peterborough Services. And he came back with a meal in a box shaped like a car.
ironic.
Yeah, called the something junior meal. So that was Ross for you.
Well, listen,
and he got it with a fruit shoot as well, which I really liked. He could have had any drink, and just to top it all off, he got it with a fruit shoot. I love
the Capri Sun, I believe it was, but yeah,
it was a Capri Sun. Sorry,
the point stands.
I didn't realize those were still going. But Ross is about to hit 30, and then he's going to have to deal with the metabolism dip, Stu.
So it's coming.
We'll see what happens when he hits that. Right, friends, we've done just over 70 minutes, which is probably a bit longer than we thought, but we got carried away on a wave of nostalgia talking about the FA Cup and then unexpectedly Jack Potato and Chicken. Just a reminder to support our friends and sponsors, Stardust Spirits. Use the code KOA at stardustspirits.co.uk. Also a reminder, they're going to be at the Suffolk Show. If you want to go down and say hello to Gary, I'm just trying to find the email so I can tell you. He's going to be in the food hall, which is a good spot at the Suffolk Show. You've got to be honest, I love the Suffolk Show, going around trying various things, best of Suffolk. And certainly Stardust Spirits will be there, so go and get involved with them if you are going along. That is next week, isn't it? Next Wednesday and Thursday, Suffolk Show, spectacular. Friends, and also, if you could, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We've not had one of those in a while. Just helps lift us visibility-wise in the charts. Follow us across social media, Kings of Anglia on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, X/Twitter, and we are also individually on Blue Sky, apart from Stu, and also TikTok as well. AJ, apologies, I always left that out. Friends, the week has started. I hope you enjoyed the first part of the week. I hope the sun is going to be out for much of the week and you have a good week. We'll be back later on this week to build up to the final game of the Premier League season. It's weird, isn't it? It's gone quickly, yet slowly at the same time. But anyway, friends, we'll be back later on this week to talk to you all over again.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.